Hello and welcome to season 3 of Mum's Work and Chaos. We all know the saying, it takes a village to raise a child, but where is that village? Well, I started this podcast to help you find yours, and I'm joined by some amazing guests this season, talking about subjects such as fast fashion, menopause, sex education, and teenage behaviour, just to name a few. So join me this season, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hello and welcome to this episode of Mum's Work and Chaos. This week I am joined by the wonderful Nicola from Happy Home Learning. Nicola, tell us a bit about yourself. How did you start Happy Home Learning? Where did it come from? What do you do?
Hi Louise, thank you for having me. I started Happy Home Learning. It's just a Facebook page to share ways to learn in fun and active ways during lockdown, because I had a five-year-old, a summer-born little girl, Rosa May, who's in year one, receiving homework during lockdown, and then I had a two-year-old who didn't quite understand why we were sat at the table and no longer playing with her quite as much as we used to. And I felt guilt as a parent for that, and I struggled to meet their different needs at that time. So of course we're in the middle of a pandemic, and therefore in the early stages a lot of the learning was via worksheets and apps. But I ended up developing ways to learn spelling and the times tables and boost their language skills and concentration, you know, on the 30-minute walks that were allowed, over bath times, over meal times, through simple conversations. And I found that that was kind of an inclusive way to do things in a very multi-sensory way, included my little girl at the time. So it just started with sharing ideas on a Facebook page. And then I started to think about Edith, who had then turned three, returning to nursery. Yeah. And she'd only just settled in her age 2 to 3 room at nursery. She actually did struggle with the transition back then. And I thought, you know, I've been a specialist leader of education for 30 years. I've taught for over 20 years. If I'm thinking, oh, how's she going to be? Possibly other parents are, whose children are returning to nursery or starting nursery or school. So I set up a free and private starting nursery and starting school group on Facebook, and I just used to share tips to help families understand what to expect in nursery and reception, and to share strategies that I'd developed to support a smooth transition. So the group was just going to be for a couple of months, really, for sort of August, September time, but it's grown in membership. There are over 1,400 members now in the group. Wow. It's a really supportive, positive community. And as people join, I ask a couple of questions about what they might find most useful. I have created content for the last 3 years in relation to those membership questions. So there's tips on how to support kindness, concentration, friendships, ways to boost your child's confidence, English, math, science. And then there are various experts that have joined the group for Q&A sessions that through my learning letters that I send to subscribers, people ask me about. So, for example, toileting, sleep, behaviour, how to play, how to make reading fresh and fun. There's a whole range of experts in the group who've very kindly usually given up an hour, because we tend to like to talk a lot. So it seems to always be an hour for some reason. But they're all saved in the group, and there's a search facility at the top, so people can find what they're looking for really quickly.
That's amazing. Yeah, my eldest started reception during that lockdown period. So she we went into the first lockdown, she was still in nursery, and then she went back to nursery for a month before leaving to start school. So, well, maybe a little bit longer than a month. It was July through to September she went back, but she found it really hard to go back because they'd spent all that time prepping her for school in September. So when we went into that lockdown in the spring, she, I think, felt that she was ready to go to school, and so she found going back to nursery really difficult, but she was very ready for school. By the time she started school, she was like, I'm here, I'm confident, I'm happy. And so she'd gone from this child who was crying every day when I dropped her off to nursery to this really happy, confident little girl, which was amazing. It was like she got her spark back by going to school. And then of course we went into that lockdown over the Christmas into the spring summer term, and it was just like, oh god. And like you, I found it easier to teach outside. And so I'd pack up my 10-month-old, whack her in the pram, we'd go for a walk in the woods, we'd do the Gruffalo Trail at Thorndon Woods around the corner from our house. And while we were doing it, we'd, you know, I'd get her to walk along logs to get her balance up. And while she was doing it, oh, how many steps can you take on the log before you fall off? Or, you know, can you get me 10 sticks? You know, and she'd ask all these questions, like sciencey questions as well, like why does it rain? How are clouds made? And all of that sort of stuff. And actually it was a lot more fun to do it that way than actually like do the worksheets. I mean, we went through so many trees during lockdown, the amount of printing we did, because it was easier to do the worksheets printed than it was on like the iPad or my laptop. It was very stressful for me. I was trying to work and handle a 10-month-old who was trying to learn to walk, and steal her sister's worksheets while she was working. So it was. I don't think any of us really enjoyed the whole, lockdown learning experience. But it was definitely eye opening, and I think as well, like, made me kind of realize that there were lots of different ways of learning, not just sitting at a desk and getting it done. But you're here today to, we've both sent out a Q&A box across our Instagrams to ask our followers if they had any particular questions about homework. And I think most of us who have children in the school system find that homework is quite a tricky and sometimes stressful situation, that I think kids feel like they've done it all at school. Why do they have to repeat it at home? We are trying to shove this extra learning in and around our jobs and everything we've got to do at home after work, once collecting the kids from school, or, you know, after school club and things like that as well. I think most of us find it to be quite a stressful time, don't we? Where we've got all of this, we've just been at work, we've just been at school, we're all tired, and now we've still got to do homework, or it eats into weekend fun, doesn't it? And I think that kids would much prefer to be at a trampoline park than sitting at their kitchen table doing times table.
And I think it's useful for farmers to know that that's just, it's natural, isn't it? I think it's like a full working week that they have in school. These are long days, and I think the most common concerns that I see through my direct messages and through the starting school group are, where's the time? There's very little time. The learning's too easy, or it's too hard. And I'm not sure how relevant it is. Those are the kind of concerns that I think families have. And as somebody who's sat on very senior leadership teams where we have sent out questionnaires about homework, and we've received a lot of responses. You know, there isn't a one size fits all, and it is a challenge for us as teachers. I look back, I've taught from age 3 to age 11 across 4 different schools, 4 different boroughs. It's hard to get it right for everybody. I know in situations I've sort of sometimes sent a letter out with activities that you can do in playful ways, and then I've put an optional challenge on. Some families like it being optional. Others don't like the fact that their child has seen the word optional on the sheet. You know, it's difficult. So it'd be really good to unpick that and to go through the many, many questions that we've had on this topic. I'm going to try. I know we've only got limited time, but I'm going to try and answer them as fully as I can, and just let people know that if you need more information, it is within the starting school group, or there's further tips on my grid.
That's amazing. Yeah. So we did. We got quite a few through, didn't we? So this one came through from one of my listeners. How do we reduce anxiety to help with that mental block when they can / know what it is? It's tough, isn't it? Like, kids, I think sometimes when homework's meant to be supplementary to what they've done in school anyway, so really they should have some knowledge about what is being asked in the homework, because they should have already done this during lesson time anyway at school. But I know in some cases my daughter's done something once during the week and then she's got homework on it, and it's not a case where she's done it a couple of times and feels confident with it from school to then be able to do it at home. And then the way I explain it is different to the way her yes. teacher explains it. Yes. And it just becomes this frustration, this anxiety about, oh my God, I'm going to get it wrong. You don't understand what I'm talking about. Like, what am I supposed to do? You don't know anything.
It's
really hard, isn't it?
The school methods have changed so much. Phonics has changed so much. Column addition and subtraction, the way we teach times tables, it's all changed so much. And I think that's one of the reasons I started my business, was because there's a growing gap, I feel, between what parents want, need and deserve and the capacity for overstretched and underfunded schools to meet those needs. And I think post-lockdown, people have become a bit more interested in and can see the impact that they can have when they're fully supported and empowered to reinforce the school language and school methods. But it is a challenge, it's a big challenge for schools. And thinking about anxiety, I think without knowing the child, perhaps I can refer to some of the common reasons for anxiety that I hear within the starting school group. And that's that people worry about making mistakes. So it might be the parents worried about making mistakes, or the parent might have had quite a negative school experience and might feel that they were never any good at maths. I hear that quite a lot. And children can worry about making mistakes. So I think it's always really important to have a ruler available, and to, when you're doing a task, to say you're going to make mistakes, and that's fine, but we need your teacher to see them. And because when your teacher sees them, they know exactly how to help you. When I go in for parents' evening and I look at my children's books, I say things like, I'm really excited about seeing the kind of pride that you're taking in your books, and I'm expecting to see some mistakes, because if you haven't got any mistakes in your books, the learning's too easy for you and you're not going to grow and develop. And as somebody used to collect in children's books as a literacy coordinator, and we call the book scrutinies, I'd collect every book from every classroom and look through a selection. That's what I would be looking for, some mistakes, to make sure that there's that challenge. So having a ruler there and allowing them to take ownership of crossing things out, I think is important. I'm not a huge fan of rubbers for that reason. Yeah. But as well, I think it's some of the obvious things that to make sure your child's well rested, well watered, well fed, and in a good mood before they start a learning task. What can happen when we're time poor as parents, and when our children return from school, and then we might finish work and we need to squeeze in the increasing amount of homework I think our children are getting each year. The temptation is to sort of rush it. And I really encourage families to find those pockets of time where not just your child is most relaxed, but sometimes you are as well. So you've got that kind of, it might be when the other children are in bed, but to try and develop a routine that works best for your child. And I like to have those moments of connection. I think it's something I learned from Anita Clare, who has, and she's a parenting expert, and she has the Work Parent Switch book. She talks about how important it is to have that 10 or 15 minutes of just having a chat, having a giggle, being playful, rolling around to the floor, whatever you need to do, having a nice snack at the beginning, getting your child in the mood for learning before you undertake the task. And because food doesn't then have to be used as a reward, and you don't necessarily have to rely on rewards afterwards.
Yeah, the way I do it with us there is we try and get it done on like a Saturday, when my youngest is having her nap, and then my middle one is preschool age now, she's 3, and so she gets, they're really starting to try and get them into being at school, the idea of going to school in September. So they have a school bag that they have to bring every day and take home every day, so that they get into this mindset of, I have a bag, I have to remember the bag. They have an optional school uniform, which we've purchased. It's just a t-shirt with the name of the nursery on it, but you know, they they've both got into this idea of, oh, I have to wear my t-shirt because I'm going to nursery. Even my youngest, who's nearly two, wears the optional school uniform. It just makes life so much easier than having, you know, to sit there and pick out party dress every bloody day for nursery. And then they've started to give her like hand, like fine motor control, like sheet worksheets. So like, you know, like squiggly lines and, you know, can she join the dot to dots for the umbrella and all of that sort of stuff, do circles. And so since she's got that, she then wants to sit with her big sister and do her homework on a Saturday. And so actually it's quite nice having the two of them do it together.
Yes.
But when my littlest one is there, it's just havoc. And so the minute she goes down for that nap, all of a sudden the mood goes, everyone's a bit more relaxed and chilled. They can get on with it. Or I finish it on a Tuesday after school. So I work from home anyway. So what I do is I'll set up my laptop at the kitchen table. My daughter will come home from school. She'll have a snack. And then she has to do her work while I do mine. And she usually bashes it out really quickly because she'll save maths for last because that's the most fun thing to do. But yeah, I totally understand. Like, I mean, this particular listener, I know she's got one child who's in secondary school and one child who's in year three. So one in year seven, one in year three. And I think as well, once they get into secondary school, it suddenly is up a notch, isn't it? It's quite a lot harder. And so that there's anxiety,
if you don't do it, or you don't do it to a high enough standard. I do think there's quite a jump. It's interesting you say that. I've just been round a secondary school today, and one of my questions was about the homework and the sanctions and how it's administered, and is it all online? Because it's going to become a big part of their lives, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think in terms of anxiety, just I don't know whether it's the older or the younger child, but some children do not respond well to time challenges. So what I hear a lot is, and Rosa May was the same when she was a little younger, she didn't like the Times Table Rockstars app because when you start in year two with that, it uses multiplication and division, and sometimes it can be introduced before they even know division mentally. I can see why they do it, that it's to show that one's the inverse of the other, but the timed aspect she didn't enjoy.
Yeah.
So it's, without knowing the child, it's hard to unpick the anxiety. But sometimes the question is, what's the worst thing that can happen? You know, what is it that they're worried about? And trying to unpick the reason for it is certainly worth doing. But it's, yeah, do you know anything more about that particular family?
No, I don't. But she has asked another question. The second question is, secondary school child just says no and wants to know why he has to do homework anyway. But had a problem. You also had a question through from one of your followers, didn't you, about what do you do if they just avoid homework, if they flat out refuse? So we've got two of the same question here.
Okay.
So
yes,
it's hard though, isn't it? Like what can you do if a child refuses refuses to do it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm 45 and my mum still reminds me now that when she took me to primary school, she would, well, they all would just drop us at the door. You didn't go in and there was no homework. We just read. And how times have changed, goodness me.
Yeah.
So I'd absolutely start with having a conversation with the teacher about that, because what I understand is that if children see it as relevant and purposeful, that's going to motivate them. If they can see and feel their progress, that's going to inspire and motivate them to undertake the learning. Of course, there are times when it's a research project, as they get into the juniors and particularly at secondary school, that's going to prepare them for the next lesson. But as you've just said, it should be reinforcing what's already happened in class and been taught. And if you're getting spellings that are sent home that your child isn't yet able to read, well, that's a lot of time you're going to spend on supporting the reading before you can even start with the spelling. And you might need to look again with the teacher about having that differentiated. But if they're avoiding it, we just need to unpick why they're avoiding it. Is it fear of making a mistake? Is it that it's too hard? Is it they don't see it's relevant? Are they not seeing the purpose behind it? And I would engage school with that. But a great way to motivate is certainly to think of fun and active ways. And I've had moments where, not long after lockdown, where we'd had look, say, cover, write, check spellings over and over again.
We do that.
As I've said, I've taught up to year six. I have sent home look, say, cover, write, check spellings in my time. I've accompanied them with parent workshops with their child, where you can rotate around a set of tables and learn a variety of ways of approaching those as well. Sometimes you just need to think of like a change of location. So I remember taking Rosamay with her look, say, cover, write, check spelling sheet to a cafe, and for the price of a glass of warm milk, it was just, you know, it was nice. It was a really nice different atmosphere. And I think breaking up that monotonous cycle is really important.
I think as well, like, that's, it sounds like, you know, being in that coffee shop environment, they, you know, Rosamay probably felt a bit more like grown up and like, oh, actually, you know,
and it was special,
I can
time.
Do this.
Time. Not that was helping her really with it, but I think there was a reel that received a lot of comments on my grid, which was, you know, what do you say when they don't want to do it? And I think if you start by being curious and you empathise, oh, you've been at school. I think I talked through it on the reel. You've been at school all week. You've worked really hard all week. I imagine you're tired. Should we go and get a lovely snack? Come on, let's go and do something lovely first. And then if you want me to help you with it, I absolutely will. Right, should we put our thinking caps on? Let's think about how we can make this more interesting and fun, and give them as many micro choices as you can.
Yeah.
Because our children have such little agency, and they've been at school, they've followed the routines all day. You know, where would you like to do it? How would you like to do it? Could we introduce some new stationery? Think about all of those things, and certainly get in touch with the teacher.
Yeah. Cool. Another one we got through was, why is my child is struggling with the spelling sheet? Any ideas? I think that, like, the look, say, cover, write, check, which I always say wrong. I always end up with repeat. And then I was like, that's not how you do it. So those sheets, she actually really enjoys those. And they're just a resource from Twinkle, aren't they? But she quite likes those, because you've got the spelling there. You've got to say the word, do the thing, da 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 da. And there's like that, you know, it's formulaic. It's always the same. That's the way you've got to do it. And I think she really likes that. But I mean, the thing is, I don't know what other kind of spelling sheets might be available out there that this child may be struggling with. Yeah. But it's, I don't know. Like, she sort of just like gets on with those now. She quite likes them. At first she didn't, because she was found that she was having to do the corrections fairly often, and then as she got more and more confident with it all, the corrections became less and less.
So that goes back to what I said before, she could see and feel her progress. So sometimes it is about giving it time. I think that's a popular approach with schools, because it doesn't require too much explanation. Children can do it independently, and there will always be children who are happy to sit at a table and do something repetitively and are able to do it independently. But we know that children learn in so many different ways. They can learn visually, they learn by listening, they learn by moving, and often linking food with learning. That's a perfect marriage too. So you can often use food. I think I have a game for learning how to read tricky words that involves food. But I would say there's so many different ways to do it. So, for example, taking some shaving foam or some flour, popping it on a surface in a tray. We're busy. We don't want too much mess at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But just drawing it in the flour might be nice. Another strategy I tutor as well, and this is a strategy that I've shared in parent workshops in school, was to put a pen in both hands and to actually see if you can write the letter. Because just that very act of it being novel and fun encourages children to concentrate. And if they're concentrating fully, they're most likely to remember. Things to avoid are always learning spellings in the same order. I've administered a lot of tests in my time, and I've had children who have written out the spelling in the order that they have learnt them rather than the order I have
Read them
said
out,
them. Yeah, read them out. And I think when you're going to invest a lot of time in learning to spell, you don't want to do it just for the test. You know? So the whole point is to be able to apply those in a sentence and to look out for that in their independent writing, both when you are writing at home and also when you look inside their books at school. You want to see that progression. Otherwise, what is the point?
So it's funny you mentioned the writing them in an order, though, because I did ask the zappers with her last week, and she told me off for reading them in a different order to straight down the sheet. So yeah, that's really funny. But it's like the chanting times tables, isn't it? They get used to it being, and then you say, oh, well, what's 2 times 5? What's 6 times 5? And then they're like, oh.
That's one of the most common sticking points. So what's the point? I think when children are struggling with their spelling, getting them to take ownership and getting them to spot what they have done that's correct, rather than you noticing what they've done that's wrong, is useful. So having 2 colour-coded highlighter pens, and when they're spelling, can they highlight every letter they've got right in yellow, and maybe with another colour, just identify one thing that they need to work on. Try not to overload them with too many corrections, and that's really, really useful. Or even putting a little tick next to each letter that they've spelled correctly. And as I mentioned before, crossing out neatly with a line, not being shame, you know, feeling shame when you make a mistake. Super important too. But let me think of some more spelling strategies. On my grid, I think I was showing one which was physical. If you've got a really physical child, actually getting into plank position, and I have a reel of where you're crossing hands and you're saying the letter names. So for our tricky spellings, using the letter names rather than the letter sounds is advisable. But as well, you can give them, to scaffold their learning and make it a little bit easier, give them the letters in the spelling at the top of the page, maybe on a whiteboard, and then give them the dashes to show how many letters are in that word. And then they cross off the letters at the top and put them in the correct order. Now, you can make that easier by giving them so many of the letters. You can make it harder by putting some letters that they don't need at the top. Some redundant letters, and just having a really wide variety of activities at your fingertips and getting your child to understand how they learn best, I think, is more important than in those early stages getting 10 out of 10 on a test. And I think as well, I always caution against asking too often, how have you got on in your spelling test? How's your spelling test today? Did you get 10 out of 10? Because if you can reward the process and praise the process, you try really hard with your spellings this week. My goodness, I didn't even need to remind you to do your homework. I know you're concentrating fully, your presentation, you're really trying so hard. That is more important than getting the 10 out of 10. The 10 out of 10 will come, but if we can get those good learning attitudes and learning behaviours from a young age, I think that stands them in good stead.
Yeah, ask the school's pretty good. So when they do a spelling test, they the children write the result in their reading diary. And so we don't have to ask, we can just look and see, which is good. And then, you know, if she has done particularly well, like her school awards house points as well, even for homework. And so, you know, she wants to do well because there's that element of competition there. She wants to contribute to her house points. And I think that definitely helps her. I think some other children, you know, either are quite apathetic to the whole, oh, you know, we're part of a team, we've got to add, you know, the house points, and others find it like quite a negative thing, you know, like, oh, well, I didn't add any house points, I'm rubbish or whatever. Whereas I think she sees that as a challenge, and she likes a challenge. And her teacher from year one to was also her year two teacher, and used to, like, you know, she would always say, she would always challenge the kids, but in a really positive way. And so it was always like, oh, guys, you did really well at this particular thing. How about we challenge ourselves and try a little harder? We do it this way. And Whereas, you know, I think, and I think that made it the challenge seem more fun. And so when she sees like the challenge questions at the end of her homework, she doesn't shy away from them, because she sees the challenge as like this extra fun bonus thing that I get to do because I did well, you know.
And it's kind of it's setting it as an option, isn't it? The challenge is the option. I used to do something similar in reception, and we'd have continuous provision so the children could play and choose the activities indoors and out. And at certain activities inside and out, there'd be a green sticker, and there might be three different levels of challenge in any one area. But if you wanted to look for it, you look for the green sticker, and that, you know, it's that tool that you're going to use for your fine motor skill activity that will be expected to be hard. It's almost preparing your child, isn't it? If something's going to be hard, you want to be prepared.
Yeah,
it's going to be hard, but let's give it a go, and not being worried about failure. That is so important for children's
massive key reasons. Element, isn't it?
It is.
We've got another question about spellings. We don't get spelling homework yet, but my child is keen. Should I ask for it? I don't know. Like, I mean, there's lots of resources available for free spelling sheets, aren't there, on websites as well that you can find. But I don't know. What would you advise if they don't already get spellings, but they're quite keen to start doing them?
I have a number of friends who don't have any homework and reading homework in the infants. My children go to a school where they do get, and they have received spelling homework from year one. I mean, I would say that the expectations for spelling are quite high, increasingly high. I've taught for over 20 years and I've seen the changes in the curriculum. So my take on it is that it is helpful to have those reinforced. But then I think I'd probably come at that from my own personal angle, which is I remember going to a small rural primary school and going to secondary. And those children who had come from a larger school where they did have spelling homework, and I think possibly things were more formal, I don't know. But those children didn't have the red pen all over their books like the children from our primary school did. And I remember that feeling from year seven. I mean, how many years? I'm 45 now. How many years ago is that? I think it's about an appropriate approach, and it's great your daughter loves it, and my girls have been absolutely happy to sit and to do worksheets in year one. I think when you introduce that though from year one, you've just got to be careful, because it can lose its novelty by the time you get to year six. Imagine a weekly spelling sheet every week from year one to year six, and there's so many other more fun, playful ways to learn your spellings. So I think if anybody's going to delve a bit deeper and take on some extra learning, I think it's about making sure that the spellings are appropriate. We want children to be able to use their sounds first for short and for longer words, and to be able to apply their digraph knowledge in those words first, and then steadily introduce a bank of more tricky words that you can't use your sounds for. But I have little booklets I can share at the end that have little memory hooks for spellings, that compartmentalize spellings into word family groups, that make things easier. And if you want to ask, there's no harm in asking. I know some schools do offer different homework to different pupils. I know some schools have a blanket approach where everybody gets the same thing. So it's certainly worth raising the question.
Yeah. And I mean, like we were saying before, like even just going out and asking, you know, and working on spellings of the things around you, even if you're just starting off with things like tree and stuff like that as well, or leaf, you know,
and
can you spell
names.
That? Yes.
Friends' names. Names is a great place to start. And so, then to spell the surname.
During the second lockdown, Asla wrote letters and cards to her friends. And that was one of the ways that I tried to get her more interested in writing and things like that. And her whole class does Christmas cards to each other. And so, like, we'll sit there with the list of her class, of the children in her class, and she'll write the cards herself. And so we've all sort of like encouraged card and letter writing within within the class anyway. And I think that she found that quite handy. So being able to spell her friends' names and, you know, writing to and from and whatever, happy birthday or Merry Christmas or whatever she needed to write as well. So, and she's still a bit of a prolific letter writer, you know, she likes to write to aunties and cousins and things as well. So, you know, she'll, during the summer holidays, we still try and keep up with it. So, you know, those 6 weeks when they're off, their friends are traveling and things, it's nice to be able to try and keep in touch in that way. So I bought her postcards so she could draw a picture on the front and then, you know, write a very short, brief message and copy the address as well. So
and that's lovely, because she's seeing that writing is purposeful, you know, it brings joy to people, it connects to you. And I think we sometimes can miss an opportunity to explain to our children the reason why they are learning what they're learning. So for example, when you're learning these spellings, it's so that you can communicate. It's so that there is an audience, there is a reader, and if you can use your sounds, that will get you so far. But then it's much easier if we all use the same spellings for keywords, and your writing, your message will be understood. I mean, I always give the example of Father Christmas. And I always put some words up that could, you know, he might not understand what that toy is because you've not included all your sounds, or you've not, we really need to work on this because he's going to receive millions of letters and he won't have time to decode them, or we really, you know. So you sometimes have think like a 5 or 6 year old, you know, but I think it's a lovely idea, that is, to send a postcard, because I imagine she got them back as well.
Yeah, she did. She got a few back, which is really nice. And my friend Claire always sends postcards to us when she's on holiday and visiting places as well. So she really likes getting those postcards from Auntie Claire and sending letters back, letting her know what she's been doing and what's going on. And then Claire will send me a picture of those letters and postcards and things on her fridge to show Asla that she's got them. And
she's so lovely.
Yeah, no, they're really good. Someone said, which does lead on from the whole spelling sheets as well, should we be using letter sounds or names? Now, I'm going to be honest, as a parent, I got really frustrated because she learnt letter names at nursery. She learnt the ABC song at nursery and then started school and went straight into phonics and letter sounds. Yeah. And then in year one, relearned letter names. And it was just like, it was like, you already knew this, you unlearned it, and now you've got to learn it again.
It's such a common sticking point, let me reassure you. So it depends on whether it's reading or spelling and the age of the child. But certainly when I've delivered literacy training in schools, what every infant and junior teacher always says is that they don't know their letter names. It seems to be a real issue. So they, if they're spelling, say, for, not in the juniors, but say, for example, it was said, they're saying s-a-i-d. That's what I mean by letter sounds. They're not saying s-a-i-d. So a couple of things. The first thing is, if you're teaching letter names, I always discourage, and I talk about this in the Tricky Spelling and Handwriting resource group, I sing it in full. I might not sing it in full here. the LMNOP song. Do you know that one?
Yeah.
That's where children get stuck when they're young. They think LMNOP might be one letter. So you want to sing the A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Yeah, you want to sing that alternative instead. And then they need to understand that, say, for example, this letter is the letter R that makes the R sound, but you need to keep using the two interchangeably. If you're spelling a tricky word like was, obviously they use their sounds, they're saying was. So for tricky words, I recommend letter names, W-A-S. Okay, but you're right, they start with the sounds in reception, and it is the sounds that will help with the learning to read.
Yeah, it's really hard, isn't it? And I think as well, when it then gets more complex and goes into the digraphs and all of that sort of stuff as well, I can totally understand why my daughter found spelling and reading so tricky. It was it was a real sticking point at one point for us. Talking of spelling and reading, we got one question here. If they are learning to read, why is spelling done too? Surely that can wait.
Yeah. In the Stilted School group, and from my direct messages, you know, they're just so young. Why do we start children? Because I think we're one of four countries that have their children starting school at four. You know, we can start early with our children. So much is expected of them. They're tired after a full week at school. There is this feeling, my child, some are born. I don't think they're quite ready emotionally, but academically they're fine. So we do have those conversations in the group. But the reason reading and spelling are taught together is because children need to understand that blending to read and segmenting to spell are reversible processes. It's almost like the link. Before we started recording, you talked about the link between multiplication and division, how your daughter doesn't quite see it. She can chart 2, 4, 6, 8, but she doesn't understand this sort of concept of multiplication. So, for example, with a word like cat, you can sound it out, cat. You can blend it to read cat, and then you can break it back up again to spell it. So that really is fundamental to the phonics approach, because phonics isn't just reading, phonics is for spelling as well. But I take on board the point that, you know, expectations are high and our children do start from a young age. And partly I wonder sometimes, is it because historically we've been a borrowing language? And I think our language is quite complicated, isn't it? But with a multi-sensory approach to learning, they absolutely can achieve amazing things. And I would always say, particularly if they're getting the support from home, if you know how to support the latest school methods and use the same language, when you don't have to worry about confusing your child, you can then be relaxed when you're supporting the homework. And any time you spend with your child is teaching your child that learning is valuable. They're taking their values largely from you. So it's worth just keep, you know, asking those questions when the confusion arises.
I like that you mentioned that our language is a borrowing language. It's true. Like we've got so many influences from everywhere, haven't we? We've got the Scandinavian sounds from the Vikings, and we've got the, you know, the Normans came from France and brought French with them, which impacted our language as well. And then we've got German influence too. So it's really an amalgamation of loads of different languages brought into one. And it can make it extraordinarily tricky. Plus our fond tendency for shortening words as well, or combining words to make new ones, like they are being another there.
You are. That's the most common misspelled word I come across.
I hate it. I'm very one of those really pernickety people where I see spellings on things and I'm just like, oh no, that's the wrong there. someone else has said the best way to help with sound blending, so another phonics based question there. Blending's a fun one, isn't it?
So many tips, and you could type in blending to the top of the Stilted School group and they would all pop up. But I think the key thing is, I'm going to say the thing that isn't the most obvious thing, which is how important it is just to read to your child. Read, particularly rhyming books with alliteration in, where words begin with the same sound, and really embed the phase one phonics, because I don't think, I could give you some quick wins, but I don't think that point is often understood by everybody as much as I'd like it to be. Phase one phonics occurs in nursery, and that's fine. If children have attended nursery every day, they will have had a lot of opportunity. But we know, and I know as a nursery teacher, that we don't necessarily teach all subjects all day, and you have some children who come for the morning and some come for an afternoon. In my experience as a reception teacher, that tends to be where most of the gaps are when children start. And if they're able to listen very carefully, if they've got an understanding of rhyme and alliteration, it and they're well, they're read to, then the blending doesn't tend to be too much of a sticking point. But certainly, when you are reading, start with the very short two-letter words, build up to a three-letter word, make sure that they are CVC words, so consonant, vowel, consonant, so words like cat and big and mop. And then the first thing I recommend you do is that you sound it out, cat. Second, you sound it out together. And by the third time, when your child does it independently, hopefully you've tuned their ears in and they'll be able to blend it. Mm. I do hear from them started school group around October, November time, and it's sometimes January, February for other children. They might be saying, my child's still not blending and they're not getting a reading book sent home. And, you know, they're noticing everybody else is getting a book sent home or is getting a book sent home with a new coloured sticker. And then, it becomes a bit of a thing, but certainly to embed those phase one phonics will absolutely set them up for early reading success.
Yeah. We've had one, someone's written in saying, we have a problem with communication around homework with the school. Now, I don't think really understand know what exactly the comms problem is, whether that is when homework's due or what the homework is or where to find the homework, because we get sent homework on Google Classrooms. That's the way we get it. I know in my sister's school, her son is the year below my eldest. He's in year two now. And I don't think he's even getting homework still, whereas she's had homework since reception. And every school is different. Every school does it differently.
Yes.
But I think from my perspective with her homework, if there was something that I didn't understand, it was ask the teacher. I found actually communicating with the teacher really helpful, especially if, like, her teacher in year one and year two was fantastic and really sort of like welcomed those conversations and wanted feedback from the parents and wanted to genuinely help if there was anything that wasn't right or people weren't understanding. She was fantastic at taking those things on board and like having those conversations. Whereas her teacher this year, I can't find him. It's really
not just
funny.
Differences in schools, is it? It's within schools as well.
Exactly.
A good place to start, I would say, is the school website, because if you're wanting to prepare your child for the year ahead, you might want to know what topics they're covering and be able to go to the library, order those books in, research topics in advance to develop their confidence and before you even start. And they should have, it's good practice to have that overview on there with all the homework policy, the spelling homework policy and the reading policy will be on there. The phonics scheme that is used must be on the website. So I definitely think it's worth feeding back to schools. And I think that some schools are brilliant at listening and will send home a questionnaire partway through the year to say, how can we improve? And often communication will be a something the school ask about.
We mostly approach it at we're asked to sort of as parents approach it at parents' evening, but at that point you're having a 10-minute conversation with the teacher and it's really tricky. We don't get a questionnaire sent home from our school to find out how we're getting on or anything niggles that we might have. But you know, it's I think I had it really good with her teacher in year one and year two, because she was always there to welcome them in. She was always there to send them out. Whereas her teacher this year, it's always the TA welcoming them in. And then every now and again, he'll be there to let them out. And so it's quite tricky, I think, sometimes to get that in. But I mean, you can request meetings with the teacher during the school day as well, can't you? So
I led a live session on parents' evening in particular, because as you say, 10 minutes is just not enough time, is it?
No.
Twice a year, and some of the schools I've worked in, we've offered it three times a year, once each term. And I always discourage storing up questions or concerns, because that 10 minutes is about your child's progress, how they've settled, friendships, every, you know, there's so much, and there's already so much your child's teacher will want to discuss. There isn't always lots of time for you to ask a question or to give your thoughts on something. So, yes, there's the email option. I think another option is lunchtimes, because you might not want to always discuss things with your child present. They're often listening, even when you think they're not listening, especially when you whisper.
Oh, yes.
So having a conversation over lunchtimes, you know, I know some staff are receptive to that. Start of the day isn't ideal, but I take on board your point, absolutely. I think those transitions, start and the end of the day, particularly the beginning of the day, how you greet a child when they go into the classroom, a personal greeting really sets them up for the day. And as a parent, that it is what you want, isn't it? You want that bit of connection, little bit of feedback about how they're getting on, just drip, drip, drip over the year, I think is what most families seek.
Yeah, it is tricky, isn't it, trying to nail them down. Final, we've got two questions left, really. One, the penultimate one is, what do you recommend we do first and do to prep before spellings come home? I'm a bit overwhelmed with all of these wonderful resources. Where do I turn first? There's an additional part to this, and which is what are your top three resources in this area? So what do you recommend we do first and do to prep before spellings come home? She's overwhelmed.
I think that question is probably in response to finding out within the group. Because you only know what you know, don't you, from your own child's school?
Yeah.
If it's your first form. So then when you find out, oh my goodness, there's all these other schools that have children in year one and year two, and they're getting spelling homework, but we're not doing anything. Am I doing enough? And there'll be families listening to this who are really grateful for not being given homework in the infants. And there'll be other families who, you know, would like it. As I said, there's no one size fits all. But in preparation for spelling homework, I would say just approach it with the mindset that they may be getting look sick of write check sheets for the duration of their primary career, and although they might start really keen on those, the novelty might wear off. So why not do things whilst they're young in really playful and fun ways, just mix things up. I think if your child understands the purpose of writing and values writing, like your daughter does, and has all of those wonderful opportunities to write and to receive letters back, I think that's fundamental, that they are willing to write. They're not worried about making mistakes. What we want to avoid is children refusing to use a really interesting adjective or a description in their writing because they don't know how to spell that unfamiliar word. So we don't want our children to get too hooked up on spelling. And I think as well, I would encourage that person to just make that learning to write process as pleasurable as possible. And I think if you get the handwriting right from a young age, I'm a little bit of a stickler for this, but I think if the formation's right, if the pencil grip's comfortable, because they need to develop an efficient pencil grip by the end of reception. That's for good reason, so their hand doesn't get tired and things don't become too challenging later on. I think if they've nailed the handwriting from a fairly young age, then that you can work on the spelling. And when the spelling and handwriting come together nicely, it's going to free up your child's mental load so they can focus on what they want to write and being creative. But I think that member of the starting school group asked what would be my recommended resources, didn't she?
Yeah.
For spelling, I think maybe even highlighter pens. So you're looking for highlighting all the good in a piece of writing or in a particular spelling. A mini ruler. So the expectation is you're going to make mistakes and you can cross them out. And possibly something like a sand timer so that homework is time limited, a little and often, bearing in mind our children have really short concentration spans, unless learning's fun, and then, you know, we can stretch them. But You might want to think even as well about things like the shaving foam and all those ways that
Yeah.
make learning multisensory. You can get things like a big sheet of foil and spread it out across the desk. And this is great if you've got a little sibling in tow, because you can put them at one end of the table and give them some felt tip pens and get them to write on different surfaces, or spread that out on the floor and allow them to do that. Big and in a colourful way to keep
Yeah.
them. Do you want to add anything to that?
No,
Your
I
daughter's
think
really, really switched on with her sheets, isn't she?
I think she likes the consistency of the
Yes,
sheets. I think she finds that, like, she originally they didn't send home the Luxe cover right check ones. Oh, I can never get it right. They didn't send them home at the beginning of the year, and I think she found that really difficult because she's got into that formulaic way of doing things, and I think she found that really tricky at first. She, really liked being able to, just that was the way she knew. She'd done that over year one and year two. And then to move into year three and be asked to just copy her spellings down into her homework book, I think she found that a bit tricky. But I think, yeah, making it fun, doing it like that sounds so much more fun than sitting there doing those look say cover write check sheets. I mean, I think she quite likes doing it and then sticking it in her homework book and knowing that it's done. So it ticks that off the list. But I think there are a lot of ways that I could be supporting her in spellings outside of those sheets when we're practicing spellings for her spelling test, which I think is on a Friday. See, I don't even know when that is. But it's really tricky, isn't it? Like making sure that they're able to get all of that right. And I mean, like, it's a similar principle, like even if you've got a sand pit at home, being able to do it in the sand pit, or write with chalk on the pavement. Like we've got we've got a patio in our back garden, and we let the kids use chalk to draw pictures and stuff. One, it keeps them occupied for a while, so I can put a couple of loads of laundry on. But two, the rain washes it away. So it's just temporary. It's that fun thing that they get to do, and then they can start all over again because the rain's washed it away, which is quite nice. So,
Another idea is you could take, have you heard of pyramid spelling?
no, I haven't.
You start with the first letter of a word, and then underneath that, you place the next two letters, and underneath that, three letters. So you're building it up, and it's just a way of offering repetition in a different format. Because most things, in terms of letter formation, spelling, times tables, they require so much repetition because we want those skills to be fluent. But repetition can be boring. So
Yeah.
it's for those children who need it, having a repertoire at your fingertips. And I think as well, the bit that I'm really excited and passionate about is for children to have exposure to a range of ways of learning and then to know what works for them. How does
Yeah.
their brain work? Because that sets them up for life.
That's so cool. So the final question we have today, Nicola, I think is one that a lot of working parents, or even not working parents, stay at home parents as well, incredibly heavy workload. How do we find the time to do it? Like, I mean, I make the time around my other children's nap schedule
Yes, that sounds
and
very wise.
quiet time and like I mean I'm incredibly lucky to work from home, so I don't have to utilize after school clubs and stuff like that, so we can fit it in that way. But I mean, if you're if you've got a really young family, or your kid has to go to after school club because you work in an office, trying to fit homework in can be really tricky, can't it? Especially if you have clubs on the weekends and things as well. It's really hard.
Yeah, and it can. And I think if you ever get to the point where you're having homework battles and it's causing anxiety or it's interfering with their sleep or you feel the quality of their life, it is worth having that conversation with school because nobody wants that. No teacher
No.
wants that. We're not doing things for the test. We're just trying to support their learning, and we want them to be keen to learn. I think all our children should be leaving primary school being curious, independent, yeah, keen to learn. So have that at the back of your mind. I've had a really, really busy time myself between January and July of this year, where I was teaching nursery, I was teaching year two, I was tutoring three nights a week, and had my Happy Home Learning business, and suddenly things were getting busy with the business. So I had a timetable, but I did the timetable with Rosa May because she was getting spelling homework, sometimes research homework, times table homework. Of course, she was in year four, so she was preparing for that national end of year times table test. And then I've got the needs of another child as well, who's in reception, yeah, and starting to, you know, learn to read, etc. And we moved house like you've just done.
Oh,
and there's
God.
Everything else. There's just, yep, everything else going on, isn't there? So 12, 14 clubs a week. So we did a timetable, but we did it together and we changed. And I said, we're going to do this, Rosa, but we're not going to get it right. We're, yeah, bound to have chosen pockets of time that actually you might be tired after swim lesson or whatever else. So
yeah,
let's,
yeah,
do it. And then, you know, make sure they have ownership of it, I think, is really, really important. But I'm a big fan of finding those pockets of time and always going back to the traditional methods of learning through a conversation and learning over meal times, on a walk, in the bath, et cetera, et cetera. So, for example, with the times tables, if you have a child who's not really excited about times table rock stars, or like you've just said earlier, your child can chant, but they don't understand necessarily the concept. I have a series of times table tutorials that support children with that. But what we like to do is, when we're on a walk, play hide and seek to get those little legs moving on the walk. And then the person who's chanting or isn't counting to 20, they're counting forwards or backwards in multiples of 2, 5, or 10, whichever times table they're working on. And they're doing it from different points, because the big misconception, I think, is that you should start from zero every time. So
yeah,
you need to be able to start, if you're counting in fives, from 15, 20, 25 and backwards. You need to understand you're adding five, adding five, adding five. And then,
yeah,
when you go back, taking away five, you need to send all those connections. I think that's important. We did a lot of hours in the car because we had a car journey to school. So if there was an app to use, I'm not a huge fan of them, but they can serve a purpose in those moments. And then it's time limited. Or if there's pockets of time where they need to read aloud to me, it's time limited, and you get into a routine because it's part of your journey. And routine, I think, when you're busy, is absolutely vital. And
I remember my mum doing it with us in the car on the way to school and on the way home and things like that as well. So it's I remember doing it in that way.
One of the tricky word tips games I have in a little activity tin involves that paper cups, or you could use any cups, with an object underneath. So if you've got an opaque cup, a plastic cup, fine. And you could put anything underneath, a cup of raisin, anything. And then I put sticky notes on the cups with a range of tricky words on, like said and was of people. And as I'm cooking, you know, every now and again, move the cups around. Which do you think the object is hidden underneath? Can you tell me the name of the cup? And it just... if you're lifting up the lid to a computer or to opening the door, open a cupboard door, toy cupboard door, or the car door, having a series of letters on a post-it in a mixed up order and saying, which word do you think that spells from your spelling test this week? Can you press each letter in the order they appear? So it's just trying to, just to slip 5 minutes in here and there. Also encourage your child to be involved in that process of how are we going to do it, how would you like to do it.
That's so cool. That's brilliant. And that's the other thing, is like, it is just finding those chunks of time, isn't it, to be able to actually, you know, do it. I mean, the school is very, you know, worksheet heavy, but there's still ways of doing things around it. And, you know, even just updating their homework book to say, we've done the homework, just maybe not necessarily in the way that you've specified with this worksheet. We've completed it. It's done. We did it in a different way. You know, they should generally take it, shouldn't they, that the child has done that homework anyway. So
I
you shouldn't feel pressured to...
I had a conversation at parents' evening where I just said, Would you mind, because I've got some ideas for how we could do the spelling in other ways. Would you mind if sometimes we did that rather than the she, if she continued to make the same or better progress? And she said, that's absolutely fine. Absolutely fine. So sometimes you could take breaks from those methods. And as I said, not every child loves the Times Table Rockstars timed challenge. So sometimes looking for alternatives is key.
That's amazing. So, Nicola, if everyone's looking, everyone should be looking for you anyway. But if everyone were looking for you out there in internet land, where would they find you?
So I'm Happy Home Learning UK. I have an Etsy shop, but I am actually just setting a website up at the moment. The starting school group is in my bio on Instagram, or you can send me a direct message and I can send you the link. And it's free and it's private. And it's got 3 years worth of content in response to the membership questions. So it's lovely. It's a lovely positive space where I think one member said, she gave me some lovely feedback and said, it's the one group where I feel like I could ask anything and I wouldn't be judged. I think it's a really special community of parents. And we talk about not just learning, but everything, all the parenting challenges as well. So
it's incredibly important to build those communities as well. And that's exactly what I wanted to do with Mum's Work in Chaos. I wanted it to be somewhere where anyone could come, learn something new, and that there was no judgment at all. Like, we shouldn't feel shamed for not knowing something. And, you know, especially with starting school and things like that, it's a really difficult process, not just for the children, but for the parents as well. So, it's crazy, isn't it? But they can also find you at Happy Home Learning UK on Instagram as well, can't they?
That's right. And I send learning letters out with top tips as well. So there's the option to subscribe to those. And then I have some products that just help make learning active and fun. All those things that require repetition, because we know repetition can be boring, can be supported in a variety of ways. So there's the Tricky Spelling and Handwriting Resource Group with lots of strategies for learning to spell and how to form letters correctly. There are live sessions in that group that are all timestamped. So every question I've been asked over 20 something years about how to hold a pencil, which spellings I should correct, it's all there, and I'm continuing to add to it. And there's a series of times table tutorials as well, which are professionally edited, bite-sized tutorials set to music, which at the very least is educational telly, so you could watch it back to back for an hour. And to watch it, and they would learn. They were filmed during lockdown, and it's me teaching my child with a little sibling sometimes in tow, and how you can incorporate them into activities playfully. And I think children learn really well from watching other children. So you see Rosa May's mistakes as well, and you see her progress, and they're all quite uplifting and novel ways to learn when you're baking, when you're on a walk, etc., etc. And then there is a range of activity tips for supporting reading, conversations over meal times, ways to get little legs from A to B and learn together playfully over a walk. There's a range of tips there too.
Love it. Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. And thank you for answering everyone's questions. I hope you guys found that really useful. And if you did, and you know someone else who's struggling with getting their child to do homework or struggling with homework, then please do share it with them as well. Thank you. If you enjoyed this episode of Mum's Work in Chaos, please make sure to subscribe on whatever podcasting channel you're listening on at the moment. Or if you'd like to get involved, feel free to email me at mumsworkandchaos@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram @mumsworkandchaos. See you then.